Turning your Bibles to Revelation chapter 9, please. Revelation chapter 9. So as we have been steadily progressing through this wonderful book, we remember that John, in his writing, he's writing this to show unto his servants, the servants of Jesus Christ, things which must shortly come to pass. And we read over, we studied the church, the letters to the seven churches of Asia, chapters 2 and 3. Chapters 4, we encountered the throne room of the Father. In chapter 5, we get to know the Lamb and the Lamb who is worthy to open the seals. In chapter 6, the seals are opened. In chapter 7, a brief interlude to tell us about the 144,000 Jewish people, Jewish men, who are sealed with the name of the Father on their forehead, and they remain on the earth. And then we see a great multitude in heaven praising God with a loud voice and saying, "Salvation to our God which sits upon the throne and unto the Lamb." And so, of course, we've had this tremendous ride up and down through the courses of heaven and earth. Chapter 8, we're introduced to the trumpet judgments, another series of judgments that increase in intensity. We looked at the cause and effects last time, and we recognize that some of the causes, some of the things that happen, we couldn't really explain and necessarily understand fully, but we certainly understood the effects. We saw what was taking place and upon the earth, and they're described in ways that we as human beings can understand, how fresh water and the sources of fresh water would be affected, how one-third of trees would be burnt up and grass burnt up, how a third of ships could be destroyed in the ocean, and various other things that took place. We ended at chapter 8, verse 13, because it's put in there to draw our attention to the last three trumpet judgments. It stands out because it's not a part of the previous judgment, of the fourth judgment, the fourth trumpet, but rather it's an introduction. And let's look at it again. It reads, Revelation 8:13 reads this way, "And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound." I don't know about you, but as we go through this, you can become burdened by judgment after judgment after judgment, just as a reader of this. And just imagining that this taking place upon the earth. You see mentioned in there the inhabitants of the earth, and that's the woe, woe, woe is spoken to the inhabitants of the earth. So there's a clear direction here that there is judgment taking place on those that yet remain on the earth during this time. I spend a little bit more time looking at woes in the scriptures because, again, this is striking. It's different. It's not a part of, you know, it doesn't say now the fifth angel sounded. No, it's something that stands out. And I believe it's very significant because what it does is highlights a shift in the judgments. And from here, there seems to be a great increase in demonic and satanic influence upon the earth. Up to this point, there has been a great number of natural-type disasters taking place. Yes, certainly things that were supernaturally caused, things that God brought upon the earth. But it is interesting, as we go from here on, we will see Satan and demonic activity at work. In all of this, and this perhaps is the most profound thing we can understand and take away, is God remains in control. God remains in control. As we think about these woes, we know that woes are profound statements of condemnation, and they're spoken by God's prophets and even by Jesus himself. When you look through the prophets, Isaiah, he pronounces at least 21 times a woe. Jeremiah 12 times, Ezekiel 9, and so on and so forth. They pronounce these woes, these statements of condemnation upon people. A woe is something that's communicated verbally to those with whom it is directed. You see here, this angel is flying through the midst of heaven. As you study midst of heaven, that's really one word. It means middle heaven. And it's the idea of where the birds up there will fly. And so the picture is this angel that is flying through the sky, pronouncing woe upon the earth. It's heard. If it wasn't heard, it wouldn't be a pronouncement of condemnation. It wouldn't have the same powerful effect. It is meant to cause a sense of dread, a sense of condemnation in those that are hearing it. It is a wake-up call. You need to change your life. You are going to be experiencing the profound power and wrath of God. So we see these last three trumpets, and we see, again, an increased amount of demonic and satanic activity. What does that do to your spirit? Even saying the name Satan, demonic, those kinds of things, what does that do in your spirit? In some, it creates a great sense of fear. My encouragement for us as the Church of Jesus Christ is for us to remember these things as we think about it. We do have an enemy. There is an enemy that exists, and we are told that there is going to be this battle that exists. We're told that from Genesis chapter 3 all the way on. There is going to be a struggle. And this struggle exists between those that follow after God and those that are Satan's children. We know that Satan does have influence upon this earth, and that he has many fallen angels that follow him and do his bidding. And this is going to be fleshed out more as we go through the book of Revelation. So this pronouncement to the inhabitants of the earth would bring about a great heaviness. And as John is listening this again is a vision that he is seeing about what is going to happen. You can only imagine what is in his mind as he writes these words, understanding the condition of the earth. So we come to chapter 9, and we read in verse 1, the fifth angel sounded. So when we've been introduced, we have woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, and now the fifth angel sounds his trumpet. And so this trumpet blast goes across heaven and earth. And what do we see taking place? John sees a star that has fallen from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. Now, these are things that we haven't really encountered yet. And as I study the scriptures, I really try to put myself into the shoes of the original audience. Okay, so you think about if you can choose one of the seven cities in Asia where you'd like to reside, and you receive this letter from John, and my guess is that when it appeared on their doorstep, they probably listened to the whole thing straight through, first right off. Because it's pretty exciting to get a letter from the Apostle John, commonly considered, and we believe, the last living apostle. And now he has penned this letter, and it's been sent to your church in Asia. And now, wouldn't you sit and listen to the whole thing? Probably take about 2 hours. But yeah, you want to hear what is being said. But up to this point, we've seen mentions of angels. We've seen mentions of stars, and even the fact of stars falling from heaven. But we haven't encountered this bottomless pit, this abyss, this depth that has no bottom, if you want to make it literal. Well, what is this star? Well, as you read through it in our English, certainly, you understand that this star has descended from heaven to the earth, and he's given a key. Pronouns are identifying this as a male. And so, why is he called a star? Why is he considered a star? And that's an interesting question. And some perhaps would say that this is a star, this is an angel that is sent down and given a key to unlock the bottomless pit, and therefore for this next judgment to be unleashed. Others have suggested that this perhaps could be the devil himself who has fallen from heaven. I haven't quite settled on who I think it is yet, but nevertheless, as we see this star fallen from heaven, to him was given the key. He didn't have the key. It wasn't his key. He was given the key. And so this embedded in these judgments, and I want to teach you this, as you're looking through and reading these judgments, keep looking for the hand of God. Keep your eye on what is God doing and where is God in the midst of all of this. And we understand here that this is big, this is a judgment, and this star that comes from heaven, most likely some sort of angelic being, is given a key. This is not his, but he's given it, and he is told what to do with it. Somebody is calling the shots, and it's not him. Somebody's telling him what to do. And so he's given this key to the bottomless pit. Now, the bottomless pit, if you've read through the book of Revelation, you know it will come up several more times. And it is the mention of the bottomless pit that causes me to really be alerted to the fact that there's going to be some sort of increased demonic or satanic activity taking place. Because this picture of a bottomless pit is such that it dives deep into the ground, and it's described as having no bottom. As we're going to read, you're going to begin to see various different descriptions that remind us even of Hades or hell in some senses. What comes out of this pit and the descriptions are to such a degree that our minds can't quite put it together. What are these creatures? I tell you, as I spent time with this and realizing that very likely this could be a depiction of demons upon the earth, it was quite shocking to me to think about people on the earth encountering such terrible creatures. But then we have to think about this. Why is God doing all of this? What is the intent and what is the purpose upon this wrath that's being laid out on the earth? Well, remember that God, in His divine mercy and grace, has made an offering to mankind for salvation through Jesus Christ. And we know that there will come a time when God's justice bears upon the earth the extent of His wrath, and those who have not accepted His offer of salvation will feel the brunt of their sin. Of their sin. You know, we can lay all this upon God and say, God, You are so cruel, but we cannot overlook, we cannot miss. In fact, we must take into account that we are the ones who've sinned. We are the ones who've offended God. And those that are on the earth during this time are the offenders of God, a holy God, and therefore just suffering the results of His incredible wrath. I do believe that there will be people saved during this time. But nevertheless, suffering tremendous torment. So I'm going to read a section here, and I want you to just keep your eyes and ears open for the descriptions and try to visualize, if you can, what's taking place here. I'm going to begin in verse 2. And He, that is this star fallen from heaven, He opened the bottomless pit. And there arose a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth. And unto them was given power, as the scorpions of the earth have power. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing nor any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion, which he strike when he striketh a man. And in those days shall men seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses, prepared unto battle. And on their heads were as it were crowns like gold, and their faces were as the faces of men. And they had hair as the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions. And they had breastplates, as it were breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots, of many horses running to battle. And they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. That's the fifth trumpet judgment. What do you do with that? What are we seeing? What is this that's being encountered here? Well, as we have already suggested, we suggest this is the first part place where we see the bottomless pit. We see the last place, and I encourage you just to go back in your Bibles to the book, or I'm sorry, in Revelation chapter 20. And look at verse 1. So we have the bottomless pit being opened in chapter 9, verse 1. Chapter 20, verse 1, and I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand, And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years and cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more till 1,000 years should be fulfilled. And after that, he must be loosed a little season. So if you have the opening of a bottomless pit, and then you have the bottomless pit being filled or being the enclosure or the imprisonment of the devil, and he is chained there for 1,000 years, the millennium. What's this bottomless pit? I see here this close connection with demons. And why do I draw that out? Why do I keep saying that? I think it's important for us to look at a couple other passages that suggest that there is a holding place, if you will, of demons, and that very likely this earth has not seen the full onslaught or extent yet of all of these beings upon the earth at one time, unless you could make the case at the very beginning after Satan originally fell. But go to Luke chapter 8. Go to Luke chapter 8, and we'll just look at a few things to give us a little understanding here. Luke chapter 8, and you'll remember this story. Jesus comes across the Sea of Galilee to a place called Gadarenes, and there is a man who has a devil, and a devil has dwelt in him a long time. And verse 27, I'm Luke 8, 27, when he went forth to land, there met him out of the city a certain man which had devils long time, and wore no clothes, neither abode in any house, but in the tombs. And when he saw Jesus, he cried out, fell down before him, and with a loud voice said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, thou Son of God Most High? I beseech you, torment me not." Interesting what he says to Jesus. Don't torment me. "For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For oftentimes it had caught him, and he was kept bound with chains and in fetters, and he broke the bands and was driven of the devil into the wilderness. And Jesus asked him, saying, 'What is your name?' And he said, 'Legion,' because many devils were entered into him. And they besought him that he would not command them to go out into the deep." And then we know what takes place. They go into a herd of swine. They run off into the ocean and drown. What do I want us to see here? Look, verse 31. The devils seek from Jesus that he would not command them, not tell them that they should go into the deep. That word, the deep, same word as bottomless pit in the book of Revelation. And it's almost as if these demons have an understanding and a knowledge that this place exists and that this is not a place they would want to go. This is a place where, and we'll look at a couple other scriptures that suggest an imprisonment of demons. And so here they are in this man, and then being cast out. "Don't tell us to go down there to that bottomless pit." And we know what takes place there. But I found it interesting. That's the same word, isn't it? Same word. Now, we go to 2 Peter. Go to 2 Peter. in 2 Peter chapter 2. Context is Peter is warning the church of false teachers and false prophets. And you we'll pick it up verse 1 just to get the flow. So 2 Peter 2:1, "But there were false prophets also among the people, even as there shall be false teachers among you, who privately shall bring in damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that bought them, and bring upon themselves swift destruction. And many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of. And through covetousness shall they with feigned words make merchandise of you, whose judgment now of a long time lingereth not, and their damnation slumbereth not. For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell, and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment, and spared not the old world, but saved Noah." And then it goes on to Sodom and Gomorrah, and then it talks about Lot. What angels are being spoken of here? Context would seem that these are angels that sinned prior to Noah, because if you follow the chain of events that are used here, Noah, Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot. And God is speaking about how sure judgment will come upon false teachers, just like God has taken care of those angels that sinned against Him. And very likely this could be what took place in Genesis chapter 6, when it's described as the sons of God coming to the women of the earth, and great men are born, men of renown, and then we see evil begin to really increase upon the earth. This is just prior to Noah's day. We wonder, why did God have such fierce anger and bring this great worldwide flood upon the earth? Because there was such evil upon the earth. And it's interesting here, seems to be that God said, "You angels that have sinned, I imprison you." And it says they're reserved unto judgment. I've often taken that "reserved unto judgment" to mean that they're reserved unto their judgment, which in many senses it is true. But could it also mean that they are reserved unto judgment? In other words, God's going to use them again someday to judge the earth. It's a suggestion. And it could very well be what we're seeing in Revelation chapter 9, where this pit is opened up and these creatures come out that are described in such hideous terms. Back to Revelation chapter 9. We pay attention to the term "bottomless pit" as we continue our study through this book. Not only do we see it in Revelation chapter 9, we'll see it in Revelation chapter 11, where we see there's a beast that has ascended out of the bottomless pit. In chapter 17, we'll find it, and then chapter 20. So this pit plays a pivotal role in the judgments of God upon the earth. Well, what happens here? What is it that takes place here upon the earth? Well, what we see, this pit is opened by this angel with this key. And it when it is opened, now we get the idea, if this is there's a key, there's some sort of door, and don't get all caught up in trying to figure out where the door is. I'm sure we could spend a lot of time trying to figure out where this is upon the earth. I don't think that's the focus here. I think the focus is, look at what is being unleashed. Out comes smoke. Out comes smoke out of this pit. We understand, you get that picture. You have the burning fire, and you open up the door. Whoosh, out comes the smoke and the flame. It's a smoke that's described as a great furnace. And it's such a thick smoke that the sun and the air are darkened by reason of this smoke. So this smoke ascends up and it darkens the sun. So this is not just some little localized, just small little fire, but this is a big deal. The air quality is affected. The light quality is affected. Don't miss how with the works of evil, wickedness, and Satan, how much darkness is associated with it. The smoke darkening things just in preparation for the works of the devil, the wickedness, it enjoys the darkness, doesn't it? So out of then, verse 3, out of the smoke come locusts upon the earth. When was the last time locusts came through here? Do we remember? Do we know? They have this cycle, right? A cycle when they will come through and they'll just wreak havoc, and then they'll be gone for a while. Has anybody been through a time when locusts have come through? And yeah, I've not lived through one, but it's just an interesting phenomenon that's upon the earth, isn't it? That God created such creatures and the way they operate. I think it's every 7 years or so that they have this cycle where they will come and they just eat anything that's what? Green. It's just all gone. Green. Everything green is gone, which we've already kind of seen some of that taking place upon the earth. And so these locusts, and this is the term that's used to describe them, are come upon the earth, and they're given power. Now, listen to that. They are given power. Okay? I want you to look behind those words, and what do you see? Somebody's in control of all this. Somebody's calling the shots, and somebody is giving instructions, and these locusts are doing their bidding. The angel was given the key. These locusts are given power. They're given power as the scorpions of the earth have power. Well, how many of you have ever encountered a scorpion? Well, we are like not real exciting church. No. You guys have you've encountered a scorpion. I'm not saying you've been stung by one. But maybe perhaps you've seen one. They're a fearsome creature as well, aren't they? Locusts, you aren't necessarily afraid of them as a bug, but you're afraid of what they will do. Whereas scorpions, you're afraid of how they will hurt you, what they can do to inflict pain. The results of an encounter with a scorpion are very different than the results of an encounter with a locust. Locusts, they just eat everything, make your life hard. Scorpion stings you, and from what I've read, some of them could even cause death. And so now these two things, these two creatures collide in this description. And you have this locust and scorpion description all together. Locusts are on the earth, they're given power, and that power is described as the scorpion's power upon the earth. Verses 4 and 5 bring to light more of the description and help us understand that this is more than just some locust plague. Verse 4, and it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass. Now, if you're paying attention, what do you see there? It was commanded them. Somebody's in control. Somebody's in control. And I believe God is overseeing this. Nothing is outside of His control. It's not like God is frantic saying, oh no, the bottomless pit is open. We've got problems. No, God knows. God knows. And He has this all set up the boundaries are established. He's commanded. They should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, nor any tree. Now, wait a minute. This is a locust. Or is it? See, that's what. See, the Bible's so helpful because it throws us this description of locusts, which, by the way, is a connection with a prophecy back in Joel. Joel chapter 1 and 2, and I don't have time, and I'm out of time already. I don't have time, but it's very interesting. You read Joel 1 and chapter 2, and you'll see a judgment of locusts coming upon Israel. And it's interesting descriptions there. Here, these locusts are not just locusts that eat green things, but rather, what are they instructed? They are what? They are not to hurt the green grass or anything or tree or any green thing, but they are to hurt those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. So here it is. They are to hurt people who do not have the seal of God in their foreheads. Who has the seal of God in their foreheads at this time? Chapter 7, it says, verse 3, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads. And so we know at the very least, 144,000 Jewish men, 12,000 from every tribe, have the seal upon their foreheads. And we know at the very least that those will not be hurt by these locusts. Are these demons? Why can't they hurt those sealed with the name of God on their foreheads? Isn't that an interesting thing? That line is drawn. God says, you are my people. Judgment has to happen, but my people are protected. And so they are to hurt these who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads, and to them it was given that they should not kill them. So they're to hurt, not kill. Does that sound exciting? No, not at all. They are to hurt, but not kill. And it even gives a time frame. 5 long months. 5 months of this plague of locusts, or shall we say, demonic beings infiltrating the earth and physically hurting people, but they cannot die. This is torture. This is tormenting. This is horrible. This is judgment. This is God's wrath. And I wish we had time to finish this because you see the description, but we're going to have to stop here and finish this next time we look at this. But before we finish, what do we do with this? So what? So what? God has given this revelation and He put it into our hands, and it is in this earth and available to people who want to read it, so that when these judgments do happen, these kinds of things will be around. And it will be interesting to watch and to see what takes place as people do encounter the book of Revelation during the tribulation time. And they begin to see these things happening just as God said it would. Very likely, what's going to be the key text for the 144,000 as they preach? Could it be the book of Revelation? Can't you see the Lamb, Jesus Christ, is the one? And the restoration of Israel is going to be because God gives them new life, and that new life only comes because of Jesus, the Lamb of God. So what? God is in control. Sometimes our life now may seem like hell. We may feel tortured and tormented, and we may at times look at God and say, "Why me, God? Why this? Why now?" May we remember, as we are seeing in this dark, dark time of Earth's presence, yet still God remains in control. God's calling the shots. And God is always right. He's always right. Is this hard to swallow? Yeah, it is. But this is taking place at the will and hand of God, yes, but He has already shown incredible mercy. And indeed, I believe He continues to show mercy even during this time by the sheer fact that there is 144,000 that are His messengers that have a presence there on the earth in the midst of this horrible time. And we're going to see God sending two witnesses proclaiming God's truth again. Is God merciful? Yes, He is. Is God serious about sin? Yes, He is. Will sin be judged? Yes, it will. Will it be hideous, horrible, forever? It'll be horrible. Yes, yes, yes. But God remains in control. Lord, I thank You for this time and for the truth that we have learned today, for opening our eyes to this, the powers that do exist in our world, the reality of the spiritual battle. But yet, God, Your might is supreme. We worship You today, and we exalt You for being our great God and King. We are on the victory side. To God be the glory. Amen.